Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Movie Geeks United special uncut Friday the 13th interview series. On this episode, we'll be speaking with the star of the original Friday the 13th, Adrian King. Understand that you were pretty much a born actress, that you started very young, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, I started before I could oppose it. I literally, my first commercial was when I was 6 months old, so I didn't have a whole lot to say about it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but it was cool. Obviously, I took to it, right?
Yeah, it took to it like a wildfire, yeah. I'm wondering, you had an audition process for Friday the 13th, right?
Yeah, I sure did. It was long. It was the summer of 79. And, you know, it was back when, all I can say is I was doing the old Marlo Thomas That Girl routine, and it's way before you guys were ever born, but it's probably on TV land, you know?
Oh, yeah, we know Marlo. I know that.
We know
that. But hitting the pavement and, you know, doing all that stuff. And I had a great commercial agent because, at that time, basically what I had done was some really good TV and commercials but hadn't broken into films. I was actually just out of college at FIT in New York, and my other passion is art, and I went there on a fine arts scholarship. Meanwhile, still doing my acting and doing my my under five on soap operas, Mr. Miller, you know, that's so funny. Our paths crossed many years later thereafter, but...
Oh, really?
Yeah, and what happened that summer was I remember hearing everyone talking about there's this movie in the trades that's casting everybody between, 16 and 24, you know, female has to be in on this thing, and they're seeing everyone. And I literally remember when I got up there, it was an open call because I didn't have a theatrical agent at the time, and I got up there, and it was, you know, probably the second or third day of casting, and I was number 332 on the list at that point. So they really, and I understand they had already been to Los Angeles. And they were trying to find a name, but they had no money. You know, the same old story for every independent out there.
Yeah.
And so I, you know, I got through the first round, and I got through the second round, and I met Sean and Barry Moss and Julie Hughes from TCI Casting, who were primarily theatrically speaking, Broadway, legitimate casting agents. And so they, you know, you got every cross section that they could see. And maybe four or five auditions later, I was still in the running, which was pretty amazing. Because, like I said, we were reading for everything, you know, every role. No one knew what role was going to be. And I don't think they did either, because we were doing a lot of mix and matching. I was reading with Harry and Kevin way back in the early stages. And then when they couldn't find the name is what I figured, they finally did a screen test. And I say that I believe my keen acting skills and evil scream won me the deal. More on the scream.
That's just it. The scream is very important in these films. So did you rehearse the scream in front of the mirror or something before
I don't believe I did. It's one thing, like you said, I started early and in biz, and when I was 8 or 9, I had done a TV Hallmark Hall of Fame production of Inherit the Wind.
Yeah.
Serious stuff, you know, especially when you're 9 years old, and Charles Darwin got me early into the origin of species and all that stuff. But I had to scream as part of the audition, and Lord only knows where it came from, but I had my mother racing like 50 yards down to where the door was on the casting office to see who had attacked me, you know. That's how good my scream was, so I nailed that job. So, you see, my scream has really been there for me whenever I needed it.
I realize that a lot of people were there auditioning, and I know you're probably sick of hearing this question, but I read this.
Probably not.
Sounds suspicious to me. Is there any truth to the Sally Field rumor that she was auditioning?
You know, I'd love to say sure, but I mean, if I had a choice between Sally Field and me, you know, I have to guess go with Sally, just, you know, off the top of my head.
You
figure it out. If you were the director and you were looking, you know, to possibly get this on the big screen, who would you pick? I don't know. Norma Ray, Adrian King. Norma Ray, Adrian King.
Maybe Sally couldn't scream as well as you.
Sally
did.
Yeah,
there you go.
I mean, what we had the
Why none? Have you ever
seen?
Yeah. So tell me what they were looking for from that character, and what you think you gave them that eventually made them hire you on.
Well, I have actually heard the words out of Sean's mouth, so I don't have to, you know, wonder about this. He was looking for the girl next door. That's what he said.
Mm-hmm.
Looking for someone that everyone could relate to. And, you know, at that time, I think I was one of the Burger King girls, you know, have it your way, have it your way. And I had the quality, you know, in commercial land known as P&G, which was, you know, Procter & Gamble, that I guess I had the wholesome look, you know. And interestingly enough, though, Now getting to hear feedback from the three generations of fans that I now have globally, and I interact with them as much as possible at the conventions and on my website, it's more than the wholesome quality that he achieved, because I get the fact that there was something special about the character that I was able to plug into, and it wasn't so much wholesome as just that deep guttural instinct to survive, that that when we are all faced with it, find it or die, you know?
Yeah.
And I truly believe that instinctually I just got it. I really knew. I'd been in some, you know, situations that as a kid myself, and I truly believe it was able to, you know, I was able to pull on, you know, that experience, and it read true, and my fans write to me that, you know, it's a lot of that, whatever that intangible is, that is able to come across, that they hung on to, and it obviously, it still works, because I now have fans, you know, still, you know, young fans. I'm talking 10, 11, 12, 13, and then they go older than me, you know,
yeah.
Way older than me.
I do want to talk to you about the fans and just a little bit, but when you read the script and you knew what the film was, did you have a reaction to the violence in it, or the kind of script it was at all?
Oh, I was so happy to just land a gig, you know, as an actor, being totally honest with you. Every actor in New York City, every actress, all they want to do is work. You know, if they're there pounding the pavement, pushing their 8x10s under doors that say, do not submit, you know, you just want to work. And I was so thrilled that somebody had seen something special in my auditions that finally worked. You know, usually it's like you're too tall, you're too short, we want a redhead, we want a, you know, it's everything except what you are. And, the fact that I had landed this, the fact that I was, you know, given the opportunity to, like, sink my teeth into something really special. And you have to understand, back when we were shooting this, 1979, you know, women were just easing out of the gate then. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I had to fight to get into auto mechanics in my high school, not because I really wanted to learn what was under the hood, but just because, seriously, they said I couldn't. And Alice was kind of like that. You know, you tell her you can't do it, and she's going to do it, you know. Just because, you know, no one should tell anyone in this day and age, no, which is such a trip after what happened yesterday. You know, it's like everybody is, like, coming full circle. And I came full circle in 1979. I came full circle yesterday. You know, it's a great time for our country. I'm just, ooh, did that come from, huh? But,
yeah, I'm telling you, we're both on cloud nine too here.
Yeah,
show,
I can't.
So we're
I've
with
never
you.
Felt this before.
Isn't it wonderful? It's like
amazing.
You're riding this wave of just a Tingletown. You know, it's indescribable. Especially the older you are, you feel it more because you know what it was like and you know how far we've come. And and it's just so joyous, and you're not afraid to say it.
That's right.
They were talking to someone. I promise we'll get back to Friday the 13th. But
oh, that's cool. I'm enjoying this too.
They were talking to someone out in the audience at the inauguration yesterday. He was in his 70s, and he so obviously he's lived a life and lived through all the turmoil of the past, and he was just overcome with emotion, and he knew that this was the history he'd been waiting for his entire life.
Mm-hmm.
You just feel the weight of that, and it's so moving.
It is.
It really is. Everybody has their own intimate experience with the whole scenario.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
Well, let's talk about the scenario.
Let's go back to 1980.
Exactly. Right. Tell me what the shooting of this was like, because my thought would be you guys are all young people. You're shooting in a camp-like atmosphere. It had to have been a fun – it had to feel almost like camp, or did it?
Totally. It was a blast. The first 2 weeks were just heaven. It was right after Labor Day. And, you know, everyone was, like I said, everyone there was a working actor now. We all had something in common, this great bond. None of us were known at all. Well, Kevin Bacon had already done Animal House.
Yeah.
Right. So he was, you know, on the, a little bit on the move. And, you know, we were all like buzzed up here. We were filming with Kevin and it rub off on us and the whole deal. And the boys were good looking boys and the girls were good looking girls. And, you know, the hormones were flying. We were having a great time. We really were. And then Betsy Palmer showed up. And also not to mention, you know, Tom Savini and his assistant Tasa were phenomenal. And just, it was a camp situation, right on. It truly was. There was not a lack of boundless energy, and everyone was just in a good mood.
Oh, I bet. When you're shooting a horror film, do you sense the fear that it will generate on screen, or are you so inside of it and the mechanics of it that doesn't register?
You know, just personally, obviously, that's the only way I can speak, because I'm sure Sean, as a director, would see it quite differently. But as an actor, I was definitely in the moment, as one has to be, and was not thinking the least about how it was going to look on the screen. Sean was a very generous director in that. He let us watch our dailies, which, you know, now I realize I finished a film, my first film in so long, on camera this past summer called Walking Distance, and Mel House, the director, would not let me watch my dailies. And I didn't realize what a control freak I was.
Right.
He had me on my knees begging, please, and he wouldn't. Sean did, which I think was good for me, being my first film in terms of any notoriety or any significance in a role, then I could see how I was playing and get some cues off of some of the stuff that I saw in the dailies, which was really nice for me because then I gave into it. Then I realized, okay, this was a friend. The director was there for me. He wanted me to look good. Then I forgot it, which was a great thing. And then I totally just... To show you the one scene where the where Brenda comes through the window and I react and my jacket I end up on my knees and my jacket ends up on the stove and at that point I was so into the I left myself without a rain jacket for the rest of the film after that because Sean would not go for a second take. That one was so real. He said, you know, anything after that would pale. Sorry, jacket. So, you know, it was what it was. I was definitely witnessing one of my dear friends, you know, dead on the floor. And that's all I could think of at that moment. It wasn't until after I saw it on the screen, I went, yeah, I see why he kept the shot, you know.
Wow. What were some of the most memorable moments of that shoot for you? What's the images that come to mind?
Oh, there are so many. There really are so many. It's almost like I shot it this past summer. That's how clear they are, which truly means, it being almost 30 years since we shot it, that, you know, when something amazing or horrible or significant happens in your life, even if you were 5 years old, you'd remember that instantaneously, right? Well, I'm guessing that, you know, these 30 days or whatever, or 30 plus days it took to shoot this, every single day was like that for me, because they're so ingrained in my thoughts. And then, you know, they're still alive when I start talking about them. They come back to me. Betsy had a whole lot to do with some of my moments, because with her, it was like playing a tennis match. And God loves the fact that she ended up playing Mrs. Voorhees, because I just can't imagine anyone else. She was she taught me so much. She did not overplay the character, because it would not have lasted this long and rung true. She really taught me about the backstory, how important it was to create that and to create things that no one else needs to know except for you as an actor, to make it come alive on this big screen, and when it's going to be magnified by 100 times. The moment, and I saw it with her last year, this time last year, we were at Fango in Chicago, and at the old Music Box Theater, a fellow by the name of Rusty Nails, I believe it was, put on this, I think he's a producer too, put on this gorgeous midnight show of Friday the 13th, and it was the first time I'd seen it again since it came out that I can remember on the big screen. And I sat there watching with some of the young writers I'd met, which is another wonderful part of the conventions for me, sat in the way back and watched the scene where Betsy Palmer, first you realize she's not all there, where she has this, like, little voice in her head going, I will, Jason, I will. That moment when, and she turns to me and she shakes me. That whole moment for me is so ingrained, because she really, especially after I saw the scene in the movie, she scared me so badly that I was so locked into that I really was, if I was seriously feeling that this woman was going to kill me at that moment. And it was so real that, you know, and that is what acting is. It's not, it's reacting. It's reacting. It's not acting. And that's what she taught me. And oh my God, the whole, she taught me to take all the gloves off. You know, she whacked me so hard in the shed that one time in a rehearsal that I went flying, and she said, "Take off the gloves, honey." And it was from that. That's why the fight on the beach scene is so real, because when we finished that, we started at the as the sun was setting. Tell me if I'm getting way too long-winded on this.
No, I'm enjoying this. Go ahead.
Yeah,
okay. As a matter of fact, which is, I'll tell you at the end of this what I found. I found notes from this scene 25 years later. But, when we did the fight on the scene, on the beach, that scene, she was just letting loose on me, and it wasn't like she was trying to hurt me. It was just that she was, like, not holding back. And it was like, if you hold back, she said, it's going to show. And, you know, when the oar snaps, that oar was not cracked. You know, it was not pre-cracked or anything. That oar snapped.
Oh, wow.
Because it was, because we were messing hard. And when she hits my head in the sand, I mean, it looks real because it's real.
I'm gonna go back and watch that fight again
this one out. Okay, so check this out. So as the sun is rising the next morning, because that's what it took the whole night long. We did that scene in one night, and as the sun was rising, Sean takes the center page notes. He had written the scene, you know, the numbers down in order of, like, okay, POV this. Adrian this, Betsy this, Mrs. Z this, Tom, Sedini this, and numbers them and tosses them away. And, you know, and there are coffee stains and everything on these pieces of paper, and he throws them away, and I grab them, and he goes, "What are you doing?" And I said, "You can't just throw away this night like this, you know? It's like, I'm thinking to myself, I got to have these, because what happens is, if, you know, I never get to see this. At least I can prove that I have this for myself." I found those notes 25 years later in those jeans pockets, along with everything else from the movie, including like all these Polaroids, these behind-the-scenes Polaroids, all the original like reviews that said the movie would never make it, and all that stuff that it was, you know, a big joke and horrible insult to films everywhere. No one would ever know about it next year. Anyway, after my stalker, I threw everything in this box, taped it up, labeled it Friday the 13th. And when we moved up here like 4 or 5 years ago in Southern Oregon, I finally had my own art studio. I open it up. Find the notes. Make a poster. My first piece of art in my studio. Make this poster. It's when I actually put the centerpieces together. There's 13 notes. 1, 2, 3, 4. 13. He couldn't have known this. So I make a poster for him and for me. I give it to him. He's like flipped out. Sean Cunningham says, "I've never hung a piece of Friday the 13th art in my house. This is going up in my office."
Oh, wow.
Seriously. He said, do the fans a favor, make a limited edition, stamp your art stamp on the back, and make a poster for the fans. So I've been doing that on my website and at the conventions I go to. So it's something, it's only $25, and it's like something special that you can literally freeze frame that scene along from 1 to 13 and watch it, like through the director's eyes. It's such a special gift, I think, you know. Not to give somebody, but in terms of like to have yourself, you know.
Yeah, and these fans are rabid about the series of films, and,
yes,
I'm wondering what your experience with those fans are at the various conventions and
it's
such.
So intense and it's so extraordinary. I don't know if you're aware of this, but I figure you've done your research and you know that I had a stalker that was so severe I went into voiceovers. Back in 1980, the authorities did not take stalking seriously, and it went on for way over a year, and it totally whacked me out to the point that even after my art was my therapy, but I actually was accepted to the Royal Academy in London to do Shakespeare in 1984, and coming back, literally, that's when my paths crossed with Victor Miller. He won't remember it, but got a role on All My Children. And in the wings, my heart started pounding, and it was the first time in my life I'd ever had anxiety about going on camera. And it's when I knew that I lost it. Whatever that, you know, that mojo was, it was gone. And I had to give up the role. And I cried to my agent, and I said, "I can't do it anymore." And she said, we're gonna put you in voiceovers. We're going to groom you for voiceovers until you feel the need to come back. And you will someday. And I can cry right now thinking about it. That was my Cunningham, my agent, who was like my second mom, Angela DePini of Cunningham Escott DePini. And she was so right. Little did I know it's going to take me 25 years to embrace the fans. Bless you. Was that a sneeze?
No, I'm still sick, so I'm trying to stifle a cough. I've been sick for a couple of weeks. I'm so sorry. You know, this is. I want to ask you about your new film because you're very accomplished. You're a beautiful artist, and your voice work you've spoken of. So it's been the better part of 25 or so years since you've performed in a feature film. What was that like? Is it like riding a bike now, or what is that like?
It was in a really scary experience once I had said yes until once I stepped in front of the camera. Those 2 weeks beforehand, I was like, what have I done? You know, what makes you think you can just put back those old, you know, cowboy boots on and say, let's kick butt? But you know what? It did. It came back, and I had forgotten how much fun I and how much I loved being in front of the camera, and the role in Walking Distance that I was fortunate enough to find, it also was just an extraordinary experience because it was originally written for a man, and And I had found a script through a young writer-producer by the name of Ted Gagan. He also has a movie coming out soon called, oh, he's going to kill me. What the heck name is it? He's going to shoot me. He's going to Sweatshop. That's it. Sweatshop. And he said, Mel House is trying to get a hold of you. He's got this script. He'd really would love you. Because, you know, I had told at conventions when meeting young producers and writers and directors, after my full circle, my whole feeling is that my fans saved me and gave me, like, the license to come back and the whatever mojo that I had lost, they gave it back to me. And I had been looking for scripts. So this was out, you know how it is in our little horror world. You just put out the word, and all of a sudden all the cream of the crop rise, and you hear from them, and you get all the scripts. And so I was really looking for something that would not disappoint my fans. You can't come back after this many years unless it's something quite phenomenal. And I found this script, and it was wonderful, really wonderful. But the role that was suggested, it wasn't quite enough for me to come back in. And so Mel said, you know, my partner, next day he called something, because my partner and I were talking, and what about if we rewrote the role of Lou Strack for you to be Louise Strack? And I went, no, don't rewrite it. It works for me. So yeah, I had the best time. These guys, it just truly reminded me of the independent spirit that I loved so much in the 70s, and that is still alive and passionate out there now. And why I live for independence. You know, I married an independent film producer, you know. It's just where the extraordinary talent lies before the bankers get a hold of it, you know. Before it's homogenized. And this script, oh my God, it just, and the movie, and I haven't seen the rough cut yet. I've seen the trailers as you have too. But like I said, Mel's keeping it very close to his chest, and I wish the heck he'd share it. Mel, if you're listening. And
when this film does come out,
you got to come back on.
You got to come back. This has been a great joy to
tell. Oh my God, you know I will. You absolutely know I will.
Look forward to it.
Great. And this has been extraordinary talking to you guys. And
it's been a great pleasure to talk to you. And thanks so much. And come back anytime, really.
Yeah, please. Thank you.
My pleasure, guys.
Thank you, Adrian. You take care.
You.
Okay, you take care. Happy Friday the 13th.
You too.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.